I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Who do you turn to when you need help solving a personal problem? Is it your partner, a trusted friend, your parents, your therapist? For many, it's a perfect stranger, an advice columnist. The coronavirus pandemic, which has forced so many people to hunker at home, resulted in millions losing their jobs, has closed schools and businesses, and led to more than 100,000 deaths, has made the everyday stresses and strains of life even more so. Add the protests of the last few weeks, and it's clear why so many people feel on edge and why relationships can get frayed. We have invited two advice columnists on the show today to tell us what they are hearing from their inbox and to share some tips about navigating tough times, whether interpersonally, politically, socially. Rachel Miller is Vice's deputy editor for their Life section, wrote a book called The Art of Showing Up, How to Be There for Yourself and Your People. Rachel Miller, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Also with us is Stephen Petro. He's a columnist for USA Today and The Washington Post. He's the author of five books on etiquette, including most recently Stephen Petro's Complete Gay and Lesbian Manners. He's got a forthcoming book titled Stupid Things I Won't Do When I'm Old. Stephen Petro, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Glad to be back with you.
And to our listeners, we want to hear from you. Radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Well, let me ask you about your inboxes. And Rachel, I'll start with you. In the last couple of months, more people wanting advice from you. What's been the volume, the tone, the tenor of your inbox?
Yeah, I think it's there's been an uptick, and most of the questions are about friends, roommates, and relationships, and also parents and family. I think just relationships of every kind in the context of the coronavirus pandemic has been the big topic of conversation.
Because either people are hunkered together or they can't see each other. I mean, the sort of rules of relationships seem to be different.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of how to have conversations with people. So it's sort of like I'm hunkered down with this person and I don't know that I want to be with them anymore. My family is not listening to best practices about coronavirus, or my roommate won't listen. What do I do when we just have totally different beliefs here and I don't know how to talk to them about it? And then what do I do when my friends have totally different beliefs and we just vastly disagree on what the right move is here?
Well, I want to get your advice on all of that, but let me get Stephen Petro in on the conversation. How about your inbox, Stephen? What are you hearing? What are you seeing?
It's pretty full these days, too, and I'm seeing the same kind of questions that Rachel is seeing, as well as questions about the rights and responsibilities, and especially the rights part. It's my right not to wear a mask. It's my right to do this or to do that, and that is kind of politicizing a lot of the questions that I see. Then there's kind of the I'm at a loss. I don't know what to do. Everything just seems questionable and up in the air these days. And goes to some of the challenges that Rachel mentioned. But also, I would add, I found a number of questions about death and dying and the rituals of grief and how do we adapt them to these times. And then really, whether or not to be a judge or to be judgy, and how to deal with friends and family in a way that's both kind but also protects you and maybe sort of urges them on to some safer behavior. So kind of all over the place, and people really seem to be looking to outsiders like us for some guidance here.
Yeah. Any evidence to either of you? I'll go back to you, Rachel, but also to you, Stephen. Do people take your advice? Is there any way to know whether they have taken what you have offered and put it to work in their life? Rachel?
Well, I love when I get messages from people who weren't even necessarily the person who wrote to me, but who just read something that I wrote and messaged me that they took my advice. So, yeah, they do. Sometimes I get screenshots. Someone will send a screenshot and say, of a text conversation where they said something that I suggested saying, and it's so gratifying because you never know who's reading or what they're taking away from it or if they like it. But yeah, it's really nice to see that.
Stephen, let me pick up on something you said, and we actually did a whole show about this, but from someone who's interested in manners and etiquette and that does dispense advice about the right not to wear a mask. Does someone have that right?
Does someone have that right? Well, part of the problem is that the guidance across the states is very different. I'm here in North Carolina. I'm in a county, Orange County, and starting at 5 o'clock today, we are required to wear masks in public. So that's very different than in other locales, and it also makes for some confusion. But I think, you know, I always like to go back now to what John Stuart Mill, the philosopher, said. And he said, you can swing your arm where you want until it reaches the tip of someone else's nose. Hmm. And what that means is, you know, we have rights until they impinge or infringe on someone else and someone else's health in this case. So we have accepted that also as part of our culture and our laws. I think back to, you know, the very angry debate about seatbelts.
I remember that very well. My right not to wear a seatbelt, right?
My right not to wear a seatbelt. And, you know, that became the law because that was a public safety measure that would help not only individuals, but others. And so we have a long, you know, a long list of things like that. You know, this seems unique. It's not. You know, the state has often, you know, imposed values when there's a public health question at hand. So bottom line, no, we don't always have the right to forego the mask.
Rachel, let me go back to you. I'd just be curious, as someone who's probably dealt with some version of this question, where do you come down on that? And just, I think, to complicate things, is that we have a president who, frankly, refuses to wear a mask in public. How does that complicate any kind of advice that you might give on this particular issue? Do we have Rachel? We seem to have lost Rachel. We will get her back. Stephen, do you want to take that?
Sure. My blood pressure just went up a little bit because role modeling is so important for changing behaviors. And to have someone like the President of the United States or the Vice President consistently wear a mask, you know, puts out a message that this is the new norm that we should all try to follow. And when you have both, you know, folks like that not wearing masks, but also in our own communities, you know, when we see so many people not wearing masks, it just makes it harder for people to step up and wear them and kind of fit in. And, you know, I think back, I'm going back in time a couple of times here, but, you know, the very beginning of the AIDS epidemic, nobody wanted to wear condoms. You know, right. There were all kinds of reasons, legitimate. But it was about setting a new norm, and we need people to kind of join in with that. So, you know, one of my changes in the last 3 months, I was sort of very kind of punitive when I saw people not wearing masks. Oh, you know, in my head, very judgy. You know, now I'm doing something different. I am praising people who are wearing a mask. Thanks for wearing your mask. Thanks for keeping your distance. And, you know, in a way, it's like role modeling for a child, but, you know, encouraging people rather than chastising people. And I know I actually respond better to words of encouragement.
Sure, sure. We have Rachel back with us on Radio Times. Rachel,
hi,
we're
about that.
No worries. I'm happy to have you back. I do want to move on to some other issues, but this mask thing is so important and sort of weirdly become controversial. Thoughts about that from you?
Yeah, it's really frustrating. And I think that people who are focusing on their right not to wear a mask are maybe approaching this from the wrong place. Like, we all have the right to do or not do a lot of things, but we don't always exercise that right because we recognize that we live in a society with other people and we can't just do what we want to do or what we're allowed to do all the time. And I think we realize pretty young in grade school that when your argument is, well, it's a free country, like, you probably already lost. And so I find myself very frustrated with people who aren't wearing a mask for sort of no real reason, except they just don't want to and don't care and you can't make me. And like, I find that really frustrating because we are all in this together. Wearing a mask is a way to say publicly, a thing is happening, I'm doing my part, I'm looking out for you. And it matters. And it's very frustrating when leadership at the highest levels is sending a mixed message that is going to cost people lives.
Well, just picking up with that, let's say, Rachel, I mean, do you and you, Stephen, do you have advice if someone, if you're wearing a mask, you see someone who isn't and they're within 2 feet of you? Rachel, how do we handle that?
I think it's perfectly fine to say, oh, would you mind taking a few steps back? I'm trying to maintain social distancing. I think with a stranger, you're probably not going to get very far with asking them to wear a mask or shaming them. And that's not really the point. The point is you want to keep some space between you. If you know a person a little better, or there's something about the circumstance that makes you think, if I say something, it'll maybe have a meaningful impact. But I think at a basic level, it's totally fine to just say, would you mind giving me a little space right now? And if people don't get that, that's very much a them problem, but you're well within your rights to ask them to do that.
Stephen, anything you want to add to that?
You know, what I would add to that is that, I've written a couple of times suggesting to people that they not go, quote, Dr. Fauci on others and start, spewing their version, which may be correct even, of the science and the data. But you try to connect. And, I have a sister who is at high risk of COVID. And so at times I've explained to people that situation. You know, it makes it personal. I think it allows them to have a greater deal of empathy for me and for others. And, you know, we probably all have, older people in our lives or those who are at risk. And I think that's a way to connect. And that's something that we need to do a little bit more of here.
Rather than, as you say, go Dr. Fauci at them, which would be all about facts and, you know.
And I love Dr. Fauci.
Of course, we all love Dr. Fauci. Right. But the idea, if you're going to persuade someone, make it more personal or interpersonal, Stephen?
Mm-hmm. I think the way that we actually change hearts and minds is through telling stories. And so, I believe that if someone understands that, either I'm at risk or someone else is, they're going to say, I don't want to be the cause of anyone's harm. And part of that is I sometimes have helped change my own behavior by thinking, since I've not been tested, well, what if I am infected and I'm asymptomatic? How does that change how I relate in the world, what my behaviors are, what I do and don't do? And it does change it because I certainly don't want to be responsible for unknowingly infecting another person.
Rachel, about a minute before our first break here. Anything else before? I do want to move on from masks, but anything else to kind of round out this section of the show?
Yeah, I think it's important to know your audience. And if you're talking to somebody who maybe doesn't know the facts and hasn't been paying as close of attention, and it's somebody you know well, they might respond to that, whereas other people might respond more to a personal story. So I think just thinking through, who am I talking to? What do I know about them? What are their values? And then trying to speak to those is probably going to help connect and have a more, just a better and more open-minded and curious conversation all around.
Well, let's take that short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. We're talking with two people who dispense advice. Rachel Miller is Vice's deputy editor for their life section. She also wrote a book called The Art of Showing Up, How to Be There for Yourself and Your People. Stephen Petro is a columnist for USA Today and The Washington Post. He's written a number of books on etiquette. And as I mentioned earlier, he's got a forthcoming book, Stupid Things I Won't Do When I'm Old. And you can join us. We want to hear about perhaps some interactions that you've had. Perhaps you need some advice. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can pick up the phone and give us a call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne talking with two advice columnists, Rachel Miller and Stephen Petro. We've been talking about what's been coming into their inbox and spent a fair amount of time talking about masks, the importance of wearing masks. Let's talk about hunkering at home. And Rachel, I'll go back to you. And I think back in March, the thought of being home and having some time felt like a good thing. And now I think now that we're into mid-June, people are restless. They're getting bored. Those deep, meaningful conversations that they might have had back in March are now just, squabbles about this, that, and the other. What are your thoughts about sort of where we're at these days when it comes to the pandemic and being at home?
Yeah, I think people are definitely getting restless. They were in May and they are now, and I think it's only going to get worse. It's also, we're in this weird place with parts of the country reopening, and so they're really, it feels like the national conversation about this has become really fragmented over the past couple months, especially now we have the Black Lives Matter protests, and so our attention is in a lot of different places. So it's hard to know what you personally should be doing right now, particularly when you're seeing your friends in other states doing totally different things. It's really hard to stay on top of. It's really confusing. It's really overwhelming. And so I have a lot of sympathy for everybody right now, because it's really hard to know what the right move is in this moment.
Well, picking up on that, Stephen, I mean, when the lockdown was more locked down, it was easier to kind of know what to do. But now you've got 50 states with varying degrees of openness and closeness. It's hard sometimes to know how to navigate in the world.
You know, I've definitely seen that change in emails from readers in the past couple of weeks, because during that phase one lockdown, you know, it was a lockdown, and yeah. We kind of really knew what the directive was. You know, stay home, wear a mask, keep your distance. And now it varies by locale. The guidance is softer in many cases. You know, here again in North Carolina, it's safer at home. You know, I don't really know what that means. How do I make that actionable, you know, in my life? And, you know, without things being kind of this or that binary, it's challenging for people to know how to relate in the world and when to start to step out. And, you know, is 10 people okay? Is it inside? Is it outside? You know, all of those considerations. Yeah. So it's a very murky, uncertain period in this, you know, in terms of the pandemic, but as Rachel mentioned, in terms of protests and the economy as well.
Well, and I'm wondering, Rachel, you know, things are opening up. People are beginning to socialize with each other. But if you don't feel comfortable doing that, how hard is it to say, no, I don't want to come over and sit on your porch?
Well, I think it's as hard as it depends on you. It depends on your friends. So if you're fairly comfortable setting boundaries, particularly as it relates to your health and values, it's going to be easier. If your friends are receptive to that, it's also going to be easier, but you just never know. So I think it might not be easy, but if this is something that you feel strongly about, then it's worth it, and it's okay to do that. I am still very much in that camp where I'm not seeing anyone for a while. And I think being confident in your reasons for not being ready to sit on somebody's porch yet, you should feel okay saying, you know, like, I'm just not there yet. I'm waiting it out a little bit longer, and I hope you understand. And I think most people will understand.
Do you agree with that, Stephen?
Mostly. So,
go ahead.
So in private, you know, and I'm sort of keeping my naughty and nice list, and you know, the naughty people are those who I'm observing. You know, they got haircuts before they were allowed to get haircuts. You know, they're turning up at parties without masks. And so I am choosing to keep away from those people, and they're kind of on that list. I am feeling there's a lot of social pressure to reintegrate, to come back together. And people are lonely. People are frustrated. And it can be hard to say no to those who are, you know, kind of excited about moving into this next phase. And I think everyone really needs to make the decision that is comfortable for themselves. And there are a lot of factors that go into that. And just, you know, and to feel clear about expressing that. And if a friend, you know, chastises you or pressures you, that's not a great friend. That's really not a great friend. So stay true to, you know, to your own feelings on this.
Rachel, let me go back to you and raise something else, but I'm looking at a headline for one of your pieces and vices. It was back to May 28th, the very beginning of the protests. And the headline says, self-care tips for Black people who are struggling with this very painful week. It has been several painful weeks since you wrote that. What kind of advice do you have for Black people?
Gosh, I mean, I think this is something I wrote that after a painful week and struggling and conversations with other friends who are feeling the same way. I think being really mindful of your media diet right now is important. Setting limits around how much time you spend on Twitter. One of the things I did was make sure that no videos would autoplay in my feed, because I didn't want to have to see something I wasn't ready to see. I am really prioritizing connecting with Black friends or people of color, and also making space for Black joy and Black art. Because I think right now there's so many just really dehumanizing images, really violent images, that it can be hard to feel fully yourself. And I think you need something to balance that out. And so seeking out Black art is a really, and it doesn't have to be high art. It can be like a sitcom or something that you just really love, but it's a way to reconnect and feel a little bit better during a really bad time.
And what about for white people who have Black friends? What do you have advice for them?
Yeah, I think it's there's no universal answer to this.
Of course.
And I think that one thing I'm seeing happening is that people who maybe are misjudging the relationship they have with their Black friends. So to the white person who doesn't have a lot of Black friends, they think they're really close. And the Black person might be like, you're my coworker. We barely speak. So I think pausing for a second and thinking about what this relationship is actually like, so you have an understanding of what your role is and whether your friend needs you right now or whether they need you to, you know, show support from a distance and they need you to do the work on your own. I think it's really important to remember that for the most part, the goal right now should be educating yourself and doing, whether it's donating or going to a protest or whatever, but figuring out how you want to do the work and make that a priority over, you know, sort of going to your Black friends and fretting that you're not supporting them in the right way, because that's just adding to the burden for them right now.
Stephen, can you talk a bit about self-care? I guess the importance of self-care, but by doing that, that allows us to be a little more present with other people.
Mm-hmm. Before I do that, Marty, I want to just add on to something that Rachel said. So at the, I would say 2 months ago, and this before George Floyd was killed, I was telling people not to be the enforcer. So if they saw something that was wrong, they should talk to a restaurant manager or the head of a store. You know, they don't need to take it upon themselves. And there was an instance where I read about, you know, this huge block party that was violating a lot of the distancing guidelines. And at that time, I said, you know, don't be the enforcer, call the police. I've totally kind of walked myself back on that, because calling the police now can have all kinds of ramifications that are unintended by a simple call. And so I think, you know, what we've seen with the protests is really, you know, it's put me on a journey, and a journey that I need to be on, that has changed the kind of advice. So
that's
to
important.
Your point about,
yep.
Yeah. You know, but to your point about self-care, I wrote last week in the Washington Post about kindness.
Yeah.
And, you know, 2 months ago, it seemed like, what a great nation, you know. NPR had its, you know, random acts of kindness segment, I think it was every day. And, you know, the New York City claps and cheers. And then, you know, bam, it all seemed to be gone. But in fact, it's not gone. There are many acts of both planned and random acts of kindness taking place now in these even darker times. And I think that's very important for our mental health, and to treat people right allows you to be treated right. It kind of creates this two-way conversation. It's challenging, but that's an important part of self-care now, which is realizing the ways that we are interconnected and manifesting that to each other.
How do you see that, Rachel? Kindness.
Yeah, I mean, kindness is great. I think it's important to me, these protests is a form of kindness. It's a form of showing up. And so I want to make sure that we're not sort of losing that point. I don't think
sure.
that was the intention, but just being really intellectually
no,
honest about what is kind in this moment. And sometimes speaking up and having a difficult conversation can feel mean. And I think that's actually why people shy away from challenging family members or coworkers or partners who are doing things that are racist, and remembering that actually not saying something in that moment isn't the kind move, and rethinking our version of what it means to be kind and what it means to do that work, I think is really important. But I completely agree that it's really powerful. Obviously, we're seeing that these protests are having a really powerful ripple effect, and that is great. And that is, to me, the most heartening thing. And like, that actually does feel like self-care, is looking at how people are just like rising up. It's really lovely and good.
Let me pick up on something you just said, but let me just quickly reintroduce the two of you. That's Rachel Miller. She's Vice's deputy editor for their Life section, and again, wrote a book called The Art of Showing Up, How to Be There for Yourself and Your People. Stephen Petro is a columnist for USA Today and the Washington Post. He's written a bunch of books about etiquette. And we are talking with two advice columnists about some ways that we can live in the world together with each other under some pretty serious crises, whether the pandemic or the racism that's been revealed and underscored by the protests that we're seeing across the country. And we want to hear from you. Any questions or comments for our guests? RadioTimes@WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Rachel, you also had a piece about how to deal with, you know, the racist in your family and have that conversation. And I think the protests and the police killing and the brutality that's been exposed, of course, it's been there for some time now, but here we are at this moment. We are at this moment all together about how to have that conversation. What's some guidance you can give people?
Yeah, so this is an example of something where, like, this is directly coming from people asking for this advice. I have a lot of experience talking to non-Black people about racism, and it's very exhausting, and I'm glad to have new people who are willing to step in and help with that. So I think the first thing is to really know your topic and know what you're talking about, which means doing the reading or listening to the podcasts or watching the documentaries. When you're having a really fraught conversation with somebody who's really confident in their views, it can be hard to keep your cool and to trust that you're on the right path if you don't actually know the facts. And that takes work. So I think starting with that, and I think people are doing that, and that's really good. I think the second thing is to, I may have said this earlier, but again, know your audience. So if you are talking to people who are really, you know, really religious, like maybe it makes sense to talk about this in terms of like faith and, you know, what the Bible says about standing up for the vulnerable. They might connect with that more if they, you know, if you can put it in terms of like, well, what if XYZ happened to me or to someone in our family? How would you feel about that? So just talking, getting on their level, figuring out kind of where they're coming from and thinking about how to speak to them directly, I think actually goes a really long way.
And from your perspective, Stephen, about how to have difficult conversations?
You know, I think I agree with Rachel here. I think a lot of it has to do with the intent that you go into the conversation with. And so, you know, I urge people not to try to prove that they are right and that the other person is wrong, because that doesn't really take us very far. And not to be confrontational, but to be challenging when necessary, challenging about someone's values or someone's worldview. But, you know, in a way that allows you to listen to them and to make it a two-way conversation. You know, we're so, you know, sadly, we're so used to the echo chambers of social media where, you know, all of our friends really think like we do, and you know, we're not used to going out of that chamber. And you know, I think this pandemic and the other parts of what's happening now are pushing us out of that and forcing us into conversations with people who have very different views. And you know, in a way, I'm the optimist in me hopes that there are going to be lessons in this about how we bridge divides. So that's the optimist in me. And I'll end on that note for the moment.
Are you an optimist, Rachel?
Yeah, I think you have to be, right? Like, if I weren't an optimist, I wouldn't be able to get out of bed in the morning. So,
it's or maybe even do your job, right?
But have hope. Yeah, exactly. So I think that's a good point. Like, if I didn't believe people could change, I wouldn't write the things that I write. So I am very hopeful about people's ability to listen and change, because we've all done it. I've done it. We've all seen it. So I get being disappointed and disheartened and demoralized by a lot of things that are happening right now. But I think on the individual level, we see change happen all the time. And that really keeps me going.
Here's a question from Lou. He says, how can we respond to people who are feeling left out by the Black Lives Matter movement? Saying all lives matter seems to create anger. Could you take that, Rachel?
Yeah, I mean, I think there have been a lot of really great things written about this, about how, you know, if your house is burning down and you called the fire department and they said, you know, all houses matter, you would be like, cool, but can you come put out the fire at my house? I don't know. If white people are feeling left out by the Black Lives Matter movement, I'm not quite sure what to say to that, because we just know that Black people are disproportionately affected by the prison system. Like, right now we need to talk about Black people, and I'm actually really thrilled that we have been. And I know that when it can feel like an overcorrection to some who aren't used to this, but in a lot of ways, this is what justice looks like. It's not about like equal fairness all the time. It's about making up for years and years, like decades and centuries of massive injustice. And so this is right now. It's right to be talking about Black lives right now, and that's okay and good. And I'm glad people are doing that. And I'm sorry that people feel left out, but I hope that they'll start to understand with all of the really helpful information that's going around right now, like why we need to be talking about Black lives specifically.
Stephen, can you respond to Lou's question about white, all lives, Black lives matter?
Sure. I mean, I agree entirely with what Rachel said. One thing that really heartened me this week is I saw the top 20 New York Times bestsellers in nonfiction list. And every single one of those books is about race, racism, and systemic racism. And that tells us people are buying those books. People are trying to educate themselves. White Fragility is at the very top of that list. And it was a very powerful book for me to read. So I think, one thing that this listener can do is educate himself and start with any of those books on that list.
We're almost up on our second break, but Stephen, just a quick response to you. Are there things we can learn from the gay rights movement to help us understand the moment we're in today?
Well, I think that the gay rights movement and also the HIV AIDS movement taught us about community building, taught us about how we educate others about things that they don't know about, and also how to, how to be activists that make for substantive change. So I think those are all lessons here, especially when it comes to both the pandemic and to, the protests in the wake of the killing of George Floyd. So some very strong parallels.
Well, let's take that short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. Again, Stephen Petro is a columnist for USA Today and The Washington Post. He's written several books on etiquette, and he joins us on Radio Times along with Rachel Miller. She is deputy editor for Vice's Life section, and she wrote a book called The Art of Showing Up, How to Be There for Yourself and Your People. They dispense advice to their readers, and that's why they're our guests today on Radio Times, to give us some things to think about as we navigate through some of these difficult times, challenging times. And again, we want to hear from you, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Advice columnists have a unique view of human nature, especially during times of crisis. I'm talking with Rachel Miller from Vice and Stephen Petro from USA Today and The Washington Post about how to navigate relationships, address conflicts, have good manners under the stresses of the pandemic. Nicole has a question. I'm having a hard time focusing on anything that feels productive lately. Reading, writing, even meditating all feel really difficult. Do your guests have advice on how to feel more centered right now? Rachel, let me toss that first to you.
Yeah, I mean, I really relate to this question. I'm experiencing something similar. I think one thing that helps me is to kind of check in with my energy levels and recognize that right now I'm probably actually not going to be good at reading or writing, and just being okay with that instead of trying to force it and saying, you know what, all I can do right now is watch TV. Obviously, that doesn't always work when I have to be at work or something like that, but can I find a different task to do for a little while until I kind of snap out of it? But I think just accepting this part of yourself, that like, of course you're distracted right now. We're all distracted right now. Don't feel guilty. Do your best. Hopefully you're in a position where you work with people who you can say like, hey, I'm gonna take a 15-minute break or walk to try to clear my head, because I'm having trouble focusing, and hopefully people will be responsive to that and meet you where you are and maybe take a break themselves. But if not, don't feel guilty about what you're experiencing and going through. You're definitely not the only one. And all you can do is kind of all you can do. And it'll get better.
And it will get better. Stephen, can you relate to that?
Absolutely. And I'm really glad to hear you say that, Rachel, because I've had the exact same struggle. In fact, I had a daily meditation practice until the quarantine started. And then I simply have not been able to sit and find that focus. And I've heard from a lot of people, they're not reading. They're just sort of, they're not present. And you know, I talked about kindness a little while ago. I think that kindness also needs to be directed inward towards ourselves. Let's not be judgy about what expectations we have. Let's just allow ourselves to be. This is completely unprecedented. I've written that it feels like, you know, I've been dropped into the ocean. I cannot see the land, and I'm told to swim. That's really hard. That's really hard. And so, keep breathing. That's probably the most important thing here.
Breathing is so, I mean, real breathing is so important.
But,
Stephen, do you think that's just the sort of anxiety or the fact that everything has been upended? And I mean, everything, our relationships, our work, you know, the whole world is in this quandary. Do you think it's anxiety or just we're in this really uncharted territory?
Well, I think it's different for different people. You know, for some, it's anxiety. It's anxiety about the pandemic. For 40 million Americans who are now unemployed, it is that very real financial challenge. When we look at the systemic racism in this country, that is another aspect of this. So, I've often told people in the past when you have like multiple challenges at the same time, try to break them apart and deal with them sequentially, and determine that order for yourself. That is really hard for me to do and for many people to do right now because they're all just sitting on us. And so, do the best you can. Nobody is doing like fantastic with this, and don't judge yourself against others either.
Yeah. And Rachel, I do think, just based on what Stephen and you have been saying, is that we all know someone either who's been affected by the pandemic or been affected by police, brutality, or by being, losing their job because of the pandemic. I mean, it seems that we're all connected to someone who's been affected by this, if not ourselves.
Yes. Absolutely. And it's really overwhelming, but it is also a shared experience. And I think that is something that it's sad and it's unfortunate, but it also is something we all have in common. And so I think that is why it is an opportunity to connect with other people and to say, I'm struggling right now and here's why. And to hear what they're dealing with or what they're struggling with. And hopefully we can recognize that we're not alone and that we can also have a lot of empathy and kindness for people who are experiencing something that maybe isn't the same as we are, but is also very bad. We can be kinder and softer with them.
But isn't it interesting, a year ago, people were wringing their hands over social media that we don't interact with each other because we're all on our phones. And now, Rachel, I mean, that is how we stay connected with each other.
Yeah, it is. It's also not. I think social media is a great way to get news and it's a great way to connect with a bigger movement that's happening. But I think it's also really important to still make time for individual people and friends, because you can feel like you're connected to everyone when you're scrolling through Instagram or watching stories, but it's just not the same as having a conversation one-on-one for 15 minutes on the phone. So I think, remembering that if you're feeling really overwhelmed, but also lonely and disconnected, maybe it's time to just pick up the phone or set up a FaceTime or Zoom call with one person who you haven't talked to in a little while and who you miss. And I'm always sort of surprised and delighted by how much better I feel after talking to a friend or a group of friends directly versus, looking at those same friends on Instagram. It just feels different and it's important to make time for that.
Yeah, human contact, even in the social media world, Stephen.
Absolutely. And I think, I think when I look at the Instagram feeds of many of my friends, there's still that impulse to kind of create a better life, a more perfect life. And then that, I think that's harder for others who are struggling. And we have to remember most of us are struggling. When it comes to Zoom, I have to say I am completely ambivalent, which is to say I have two very strong opposing viewpoints on it. Yes, I understand that it allows me to see and to be present. And that is wonderful, but I find it exhausting, and I generally find when it's a larger group, it's really challenging to me and to others to have kind of meaningful, in-depth conversations. So I think keeping them smaller, sort of between two and four is probably a good rule of thumb. And, and if someone is in your physical distance and you can keep that outside, I think that's a great way to get some vitamin D as well as some, FaceTime without any capital letters in that word.
Exactly. Yeah, I hear you. Did you want to add something, Rachel?
Yeah, I'm very much with you. I'm also a fairly introverted person, so those smaller hangouts are the way to go. And I think that we all know instinctively that social media is quote unquote not real, that people are putting that better version forward. So I think if we all acknowledge that, then we should remember then simply looking at somebody's Instagram feed actually isn't going to tell us what's going on with their life in a meaningful way. Like, you do still need to have those offline private conversations, because of course what's on Instagram isn't everything that's going on with them. Like, it never is, and right. It shouldn't be. So don't let that be a stand-in for actually saying, hey, how was that vacation? I saw the pictures. They looked great. What was it like? And maybe there's a bunch they didn't post online that you can learn more about.
Here's a question from Patty. She says, how can I deal with a spouse who is angry at me for not being ready to visit friends for dinner? He says, I'm just afraid of everything. I mean, that's all we have to work with. But Rachel, can I toss that back to you and then to you, Stephen?
Sure.
Well, I think I, too, am afraid of a lot of things. I think that's an okay way to be right now. But I think in these situations, it's about pulling back and saying, okay, what is my relationship with this person like all the time? Do they generally hear my concerns? Do they care about my safety? Do I feel heard and seen and valued? Because if the person you're with is making you feel guilty for a very reasonable fear, that is not great. And that's mm-hmm. something that probably is worth some more thought or a bigger conversation. So I think like asking yourself, does this person care about me all the time? Do they care about my needs? Because in my experience, people who don't, who make you feel bad or make you feel small for fears, that's not great. And I don't know anything about you or your relationship beyond that, but I think, try to talk to them from that point of view and say, it makes me feel this way when you say that, and it really hurts, and maybe they'll come around. But also ask yourself, is this person showing up for me all the time in other ways, or are they letting me down in other ways too?
Stephen, your thoughts?
Well, despite what I just said about Zoom a moment ago, I have seen a number of therapists and a number of people that I know, as well as others, who are doing Zoom therapy. And I don't have any data on this, but anecdotally, many relationships are challenged right now. I mean, we're not used to, spending all this time with a partner or spouse, and then there are different values about how to reintegrate into the world that usually are, they don't come from nowhere. They come out of longstanding communication type issues. So, no stigma about finding a therapist and, using that as a forum, but also, respecting, each other's points of view on this. But it's really difficult. Like, if you're going to be in the same house and, your spouse goes out and you don't, he or she's then going to come back. And, are they going to be sleeping in the other bedroom? That's kind of facetious, but it's a real challenge.
We mentioned rituals earlier, and I'm thinking of, certainly funerals, birth of babies, weddings. And we are seeing, Rachel, on the one hand, a fair level of creativity, people coming up with ways to acknowledge these and memorialize these important moments in people's lives. Can you speak to that at all?
Yeah, I think actually speaking of Zoom therapy, I talked to my therapist about this during one of our Zoom calls a few weeks ago about rituals and how we find them and create them. And he said something to me that I've been thinking about a lot, which is that rituals are built to be flexible. Like, that's sort of the whole thing, that there are sort of these core essences that they boil down to, but they translate fairly well across time and across space. So I think actually we're very equipped to make these rituals happen. And I think they're really important because they connect us to something bigger than ourselves and to other people. And they're a way of honoring and saying, this thing matters, even when bad things are happening. So right now I'm thinking a lot about Pride, and I'm really sad that I don't get to have a Pride party this year. I'm really bummed about it. So I'm thinking, okay, what are little things I can do every single day to feel connected? And I, one of the things I've been doing at Vice is running this indoor shoebox Pride parade, where we're inviting people to create their own mini Pride floats as a way to say, like, yeah, it's not the parade isn't going to happen this year in the way that it did in years past, but like, we still are here and we still care about each other. So like, what is a tiny way we can honor that? And that feels really good. And it's really affirming to find little ways, and sometimes those little things are all you need. Like, we don't weddings all the time. Like, a wedding is great, but ultimately going to City Hall can be just as romantic and wonderful. So Don't get too caught up in the big thing, and remember just at the what is this ritual at its core, and how can I make that happen in my life right now?
And you're talking about making like a shoebox as a kind of a parade, part of a parade?
Yeah, like making little teeny tiny floats with whatever you've got inside and taking a picture of it and contributing to our socially distant parade.
Oh, that's great. Stephen, anything you want to add to that?
Well, I'm going to just add to one thing, which is, you know, I often feel that it's important to, you know, come out of that various thing. So about my comments about Zoom therapy, yes, I have participated in Zoom therapy too. So it's been useful at this time. You know, in terms of rituals, you know, I think especially, you know, around death and grief and saying goodbye. You know, I've heard from a number of people how, you know, they have not had the opportunity to say goodbye to a loved one because that individual may be, you know, in the hospital and they can't visit. And then, you know, one of the benefits of traditional grief rituals is that it gives you things to do, you know, in the moments after death, whether it's planning a funeral, planning a memorial, responding to notes. And, you know, that is kind of, you know, an important part of the healing process. And, you know, I've seen a number of you know, Skype and Zoom ceremonies, and I think that's a wonderful adaptation. But I am hearing from people, you know, they miss that physical hug. They miss the touch that, you know, that is so important, you know, at a time like that. And that is hard to replicate, you know, in an online way, sad to say.
Well, let me pick up on that. I'm watching the clock here, Rachel, but I'm thinking about people who were dating during the pandemic and, you know, wanting to feel that human touch, but being concerned about the potential risks of transmitting or getting the virus. How do we sort of figure out how to make that work?
Yeah, I don't have the answer. It's one of the things that is really difficult, and I really feel for people who are isolating alone or who are dating someone who they can't see, because that is it's really hard. And there's no way around that. And I think I've been heartened by the fact that people are being so open and honest about it, because it does help to just say it and have other people say, yeah, same, I'm also going through that. But the reality is it might not change for a little while, and it's okay to be sad about that. And it's okay to mourn that. This is bad. This is a bad thing, and it's going to feel bad for a while. And sometimes there isn't a solution. Sometimes things are just bad, and you have to sit with them. And that probably isn't necessarily the most hopeful thing to say, but for me, when I've been going through hard times, it actually has helped me a lot to just be like, oh, I feel bad because things are bad, and I'm going to feel bad for a while until I don't. And once I've relieved myself of sort of the guilt and the pressure to feel better, it actually sort of starts to help a little bit.
And the idea of labeling that, whatever that emotion is, to give it a name.
Yep, exactly.
Stephen, any final thoughts, about a minute before we have to end our conversation?
You know, I guess my final thought would be, we need to remain adaptable and flexible to, you know, a series of unknown situations. And, you know, I hope people will continue to reach out when they feel like they need help, you know, whether it's to five columnists like us, whether it's to friends, you know, whether it's to therapists, because we all of us need guidance at this time. And we also all need to try to stay together in this. And that's, I think that's one of, you know, one of the great challenges, that I'm hoping that will be one of the great outcomes too.
That we know this about ourselves and each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's been such a pleasure talking to both of you. Thank you very much for joining us today in Radio Times. Rachel Miller, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a lovely conversation. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And she is Vice's deputy editor for their Life section. Again, wrote a book called The Art of Showing Up, How to Be There for Yourself and Your People. Stephen Petro, as always, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you. And Rachel, I'll Zoom you later.
There you go. Bringing you two together. And he's a columnist for USA Today and The Washington Post. He's got a forthcoming book, Stupid Things I Won't Do When I'm Old. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about the program, including how to download a podcast of the show. Let's see. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. I'm in the studio today, so it's nice to actually see her as opposed to being home in my living room. Debbie Builder and John Ahrens and Kelsey Hansen are the producers of Radio Times. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us.